This week on Barbell Shrugged, we're going to talk about core training, old school versus new school, anti-movement, un-movement, stability, and programming for core training.
What's up, guys? This is CTP, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. Make sure you check out our video versions of all these podcasts on our website, fitter.tv. On all of our video versions, we include Technique Wad, which is our series of technique instruction videos for CrossFitters, free previews of some of the seminars we put out, and then sometimes come out of the studio and have special video segments such as cooking in the kitchen with Brandy that one time and out in the pool with Lucas, and who knows what the next thing we'll do is. So make sure you check out our website, fitter.tv, and watch the videos as well.
Two, one.
Clap.
Welcome to Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Bletto here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore.
You bet.
Yay. Sorry, guys. We don't have a guest today.
Chris is our guest. Chris hasn't been here in like a month.
Yeah, I've been out.
Feels
for two,
like
3 weeks.
We had to like catch you up on how we do things now.
Like, where do I put my hands when I podcast?
Exactly. It's pretty tough.
He's gonna have to relearn how to hold the new sweet Barbell Shrug mugs that we just got. We've been selling these mugs forever, and we haven't had them on a podcast for months.
They make the tea taste better.
They do,
definitely.
And actually, if you drink from this, you will be stronger.
Because we put...
It's because of the specialty.
That's right.
We're not telling you what's in it.
No, we wrap up some drugs in the ceramic formula. It leaches into whatever you drink. That's the explanation. Psh, don't tell the government. Dimethylamine or whatever that shit is in the ceramic.
Yeah. What do we want to talk about today?
Core training.
Core training.
Core training. Oh, boy.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means. What does that mean, Mike?
Means we're going to make the flabby part into a six-pack.
Spring break's coming up.
Yeah.
Is this is this a big media pillar of the buzzword modern fitness culture that we've taken on directly? Have we done like a functional training episode yet?
I don't know what you're talking about. I was just going to say function, power, speed, CrossFit.
Core shreddedness. But core training still is, I've been disassociated from pop culture and the fitness world for a long time now. Absolutely no clue, and I like that, but yeah. Is this still a thing?
I think it's still a big buzzword.
Core is still core training. Intoxicates people.
I think core training and functional fitness or functional training are still the two big buzzwords that nobody
Santana
really knows the hell they mean.
I can't wait.
Is he still doing his thing? It's been since like 2005 since I even mentioned that guy's name, but he's popped in my memory.
I haven't seen him present in a while. But yeah,
I have no idea.
You know what? In his defense, he does a lot of like the core training stuff, but it's always like the little stuff in between all the really important stuff that he just assumes everyone already knows how to do. So I think people give him a bad rap sometime, and they're like, all he does is push-ups on med balls. And it's like, no, like I think he does heavy sets of squats, and then as like his in-between movement, he'll go do something novel.
But does he attribute it to the novel movement?
I don't think so. I think, look at the guy. He's huge. He's a big, strong dude. I don't think he got that from doing push-ups on med balls.
He's got a big head, I'll give you that.
Yeah, you know, he looks like a big, strong guy. I've heard him speak a couple times. Like, I like what he says in a lot of cases.
Of course, I'm just joking. Yeah, the guy's probably perfectly fine, gentlemen. Sure, it's a big, nice, very super nice training facility with lots of cable machines that cost more than, you know, my car is worth. That's probably very accurate.
Oh, yeah. Man, you just brought up a really good point. I just started thinking about what my cars are worth, and none of them...
You cannot
worth,
buy
like,
one.
I couldn't buy one treadmill.
You couldn't buy one pneumatic chest press machine,
no,
could you?
No. I'd have to sell 3 cars to get one of those.
All right, what is core training, Mike?
And by the way, I do have a truck for sale if anyone's looking to buy it.
Don't shoehorn your functions. Yeah, I'll pose this to you because you tweeted, somebody challenged you to, or you challenged somebody else to give a political comment in 140 characters less. So I'll do the same to you. Core training in tweet form. That is your definition. How do you say it? Super quick. Define it in 140 characters or less. Not that I can check.
Core training?
Yeah. Define it in one sentence.
Training the musculature that is your core.
That's
brilliant.
Silly.
Brilliant.
There you go. That's it. That's all. All right, you guys can turn the podcast off now.
Can you point to your core?
It's
a trick question.
It's between the nipples and the genitalia.
There you go.
Oh, jeez. All right. Yeah, that's about it.
All right, so essentially, a training philosophy that puts maybe at a heightened focus, maybe an inordinate amount of focus on training the muscles of the midsection of your body.
Yeah. I mean, well, actually, if you look back, we're going to talk a little bit about old school versus new school. You look back at some of the, like, Flex magazine and the core training that you'll get out of one of those, and a lot of it's, you know, sit-ups and, like, all those variations of, like, core flexion, I guess you could call it.
Or the classic trunk standing up with a dumbbell, do a little side crunch.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe you have two dumbbells, you do this, which doesn't make any sense, but you do this.
Yeah, like I've actually seen.
Happens all the time.
I saw some power lifters doing that one day. They had the dumbbell in each hand and were going back and forth. I was like, this is retarded.
What's going on?
Try grabbing one dumbbell with one hand and then do the same thing.
See if that works better.
Yeah, so it seems like the old school way or the bodybuilding way is to isolate the core. So try to find out which muscles are in the core and then isolate them and then flex them as hard as you can. Yeah.
So you're doing abs, basically, is what most people think.
Yeah.
So you're doing lots of sit-ups.
So you got your obliques.
Trying to work your six-pack.
Yeah, you got your obliques. You got the rectus.
They all work individually.
Abdominis.
There you go.
Holy shit.
It's too late in the day for
all my,
you.
All my kinesiology knowledge.
Thanks, NDK.
Just floated away.
After 5 p.m., no good.
Yeah. But, of course, it does include training the muscles of the back as well. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I think that gets left out a lot. Yeah. People talk about core, and they automatically assume it's your six-pack. Maybe the obliques,
Muscles don't function independent of these muscles when it comes to you doing something... That's a sporting movement.
Right.
Let's all be clear on this readership.
Yeah, so from a bodybuilding perspective, or, you know, like if you're trying to have like a six pack for the beach, you can isolate those muscles and try and cause like some muscle growth. So you'll do a lot of reps and
good luck with that.
Yeah. I mean, and it'll probably work. I mean, I spent probably a decade of my life doing abs pretty consistently, and they look pretty good. until I got married, and I got married, and then, I'm not sure that had anything to do with the training.
So. We know these big life moments, like getting married and having kids, apparently your testosterone goes down, maybe some evolutionary incentive for you to not go rambling. That's a real thing, dude.
Brian Schilling was telling me about
this. You have a kid, your testosterone mysteriously does go down. It's a control mechanism to keep you in the house watching the baby. I'm not lying. Everybody who's listening, go to PubMed, type in a series of keywords, baby, male, testosterone, neutering, whatever you want to put in there. It will come up, the evidence.
So that's why the abs go away.
It could be a contributing factor. That and you sit on a couch eating ding-dings or something.
You know, yeah, that could be it. And was it Poliquin put something together about where you hold fat? I think you're more familiar with this than I am. He put together, like, you know, if you hold fat... Mm-hmm. In your upper body, then you probably have more estrogen around your belly. That might be, or
yeah, I don't have all of it memorized.
It had more to do with diet than it did with types of training.
Yeah, Paul can put together his whole biosignature modification system where I don't know exactly how he did it, but he took, from what I know, he took maybe like 20 years of data, and he correlated all of the blood work that he'd done with all of his high level athletes in Canada over the last couple decades, and he showed that, you know, so many people with depressed cortisol, for example, had a lot of trouble when they took their skin fold measurements, when they're measuring their body fat, at losing like abdominal subcutaneous fat. And people that had trouble with their insulin levels had problems with this part of their body or the other part of their body. And I don't remember exactly which hormone correlated to which area of their body or which individual skin fold measurements. But from what I know, a lot of people... follow his correlations and that system and have gotten a lot of value out of it. And, you know, when someone's trying to lose body fat and they're losing it overall, but they might not be losing it in one spot or another, or they can go make very specific changes to their diet to modify those very specific hormones if they're not losing fat in a very particular area. So I've never done it myself, and I'm not an expert in it. I know he has some certifications for that. But go ahead and Google about biosignature modification and see what comes up.
Everyone go spend money on that certification.
Yeah, I wonder how much that cert is.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably no more than any other cert, really. But yeah. even CrossFit's $800 or $1,000, however much it is these days.
Yeah.
mean, they're all good certs. They got, they're plenty of value, but they're definitely not cheap.
Hit point one.
Point one, yeah. Talk about old school versus new school. We actually haven't talked about new school core training yet. Mm-hmm. And that kind of falls into the whole functional part of things, you know, is doing crunches and side bends and all that kind of stuff functional?
Is that new school? What?
No, that's old school.
Old school.
Well, I'm talking about
like isolating movements is kind of old school. And new school is more of the functional is like, you know, you're doing
all over, the balancing stuff, and over, the stabilization stuff.
Yeah, overhead squats. Like you gotta like, you know, say you double your body weight, you know, by putting
overhead. You're talking, a different arc, like our like, approach to
like
core
a new
training.
School, yeah, like how we do core training now.
I was saying new school meaning all the bullshit people try to sell now to train your core, like
no,
Bosu ball, banded, external rotation, well,
infomercial core training.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Too. So new school is basically what we know to be.
All right, we talked about old school
performance training for the abs.
We'll do new school in a minute. Let's talk about infomercial.
Okay, that's
fun core training.
Well, I kind of put infomercial core training in the old school category because most of it is just, it's like buy the crunch machine and you do 1,000 crunches a day and you're going to get six pack abs.
It's easy. They always, the infomercial always sells like how hard it's not. Like,
yeah.
It's like, this won't be hard for you at all.
You don't even know what you're doing. You'll just be watching TV. You'll be watching Game of Thrones and getting a six pack at the same time. The best place for these gimmicks is like the Sky Mall catalog. They got some crazy stuff. Training guy, like, you know, while you're sitting on a toilet, wrap this thing around and simulate it. It'll plug it into the toilet and it'll simulate your abs. All kinds of things that don't make any sense. Like one thing they sell is a
every time you
low
flush.
Back stretcher and ab isolating machine. It's a like a T-shaped metal thing with like two curved metal brackets that like tie into it. And like the T-shaped thing has a handle. So I guess you just hold it and you just put your thighs around it and then they should have got his laying on the floor with that in his legs, like back stretch. I go, back stretch. And then they show her holding this lady, she's holding it, and she's like doing this on the floor, like isolate your abs. Like it was a bizarre, like $100 piece of metal that I'm sure somebody probably scooped that up off the online catalog immediately. And all kinds of bizarre little battery powered stimulators. Like the old Russian stem units, but some $20 thing you put on your abs and it's going to give you abs by causing muscle quivers. You know, all that kind of stuff. It's brilliant.
It is. All right, that was easy.
So we'll close that point by saying just ignore all that, you know.
All right, and new school is more of the, anti-flexion, not anti-flexion. Well, I guess it would be.
Yeah, anti-flexion is what you would do in a squat or a deadlift or anything else. Right. Anytime you're not rounding your back when you're doing front squats, overhead squats, deadlifts, RDLs, or anything like that is anti-flexion.
That would be the core you can't see.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the core muscles that are on your back instead of on the front of you like your abs. I mean, your spinal erectors are core muscles. Like you said before, any muscles that are in between your hips and your shoulders, basically, anything on your torso and your trunk is your core muscles. And the main role of those in real athletics is to keep your spine from moving. So when we're talking about doing heavy squats and deadlifts, it's keeping your spine from going into flexion.
Right.
So it's anti-flexion. And then the other types of movements your spine could do is it could go into extension or it could go into lateral flexion like side bending or it could rotate. And so you have those other functions of your core muscles too where you have resisting flexion like we just mentioned. We have resisting extension, which is like if you snake off the ground in a push-up, you hyperextend your back and then, you know, push away from the floor and then you come back to the top. And if you stayed nice and straight and you resisted that extension, then you would stay straight all the way the whole time without snaking, right? So if you have very weak abs, then you're not strong enough to keep a straight neutral spine, then you're missing out on that benefit, that muscular benefit of resisting extension. And then you're throwing your back into hyperextension, which is kind of wearing on your back the same way, except the opposite direction that it would if you were rounding your back when you're doing your squatting.
And you get very practical things, like if you go for a 30-minute walk, you get cramps in your lower back because you start losing position. So it directly affects your quality of life on every level.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't keep these positions, it's why you train.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point where anytime, you know, like if you're walking, you're on one leg, and then you're on two legs for a second, then you're on one leg again. Anytime you're on one leg in single leg stance, you're doing some type of core training. If you're on one leg, it kind of makes sense that if your pelvis is, I have any good props here. If you're on,
this is your pelvis.
Just drop it. This is your pelvis.
I broke it. On,
not core training.
Yeah. So
brilliant point, coach.
So if you're on one leg, then one side of your hip is being supported by the leg that's on the ground, and the other hip should just fall down, and your pelvis shouldn't be flat to the floor anymore. It should kind of fall out. But if you have strong core musculatures, strong hip muscles on your side, and strong obliques kind of on the opposite side, then those muscles can contract and it can level your pelvis out again. So doing, you know,
yoke.
Yeah, doing yoke
walks.
That's
a good segue into what we may both agree is maybe the best core exercise you could possibly conceive of.
It really is. Super heavy carries are very hard on your core musculature, especially lateral anti-flexion type muscles that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Just a second
ago. Well, let's cover this real quick. Let's talk about the different what exactly your core is responsible for. Mm-hmm. So let's say four. So you have anti-extension, mm-hmm. Anti-rotation,
mm-hmm.
Anti-flexion,
right?
And then I guess like
it was anti-lateral flexion.
Yeah,
you anti-lateral almost had it. Flexion. So you're not so
yeah.
dumb.
Yeah.
So we talk about anti-flexion, anti-extension.
I have it written down somewhere. I don't have to memorize.
It's in my Evernote.
That's right. And then we briefly talked about anti-lateral flexion, which probably the easiest way to really feel that one is to do a very heavy one-arm farmer's walk, like a suitcase carry. If you put 150 pounds or put like body weight in one hand and try to walk around with it, it's going to want to pull you to the side, and you're going to have to resist that lateral flexing motion. And you're really going to feel that, especially on your, you know, kind of your obliques on the opposite side. So you're resisting lateral flexion. The other one is anytime you're keeping your shoulders and your hips facing the same directions, then you are, and you're being, you have a force acting on you trying to make you rotate, then you're training resisting rotation. That basically, in sport, the time that would happen most frequently would be anytime you're throwing something in rotation. If you're spinning and you're throwing something, or if you're, someone's pushing like on one shoulder and you're resisting that motion, then
like what an offensive lineman may do when they're blocking.
Exactly. Yeah. Or anytime you're pushing somebody with one arm, then all of this has to contract. That way, when you push on them, you don't just rotate as you extend your arm.
That would include even something like golf.
Yeah.
And that's actually was one reason golfers end up with back injuries is because they have a weak core and mm-hmm. their joints are not, they don't have mobility where they need it. So they end up sacrificing at their core, causing back problems.
Yeah, so this all plays into that joint by joint concept that I've mentioned on a bunch of shows or on a bunch of episodes and in the mobility seminar. And basically what that says is that you have joints that are supposed to move, and those are your mobile joints. In the case of golfers, they tend to get low back pain in a lot of cases because they can't rotate at their hips very well, and they can't rotate their thoracic spine, their upper back, very well. And so the stable joint, kind of quote unquote the stable joint in the middle, is their low back. And if they can't rotate at the joints above and below that, then they'll destabilize their low back, and they'll rotate the low back, and they'll injure their low back. So stability means being strong enough not to move. And we just talked about anti-lateral flexion, anti-rotation, anti-extension, anti-flexion. So those anti-movement properties of your core musculature are basically stability-based. You're training your core musculature to keep your back in a neutral position where it's not flexed or rotated at all. But if you lack mobility and you can't get the range of motion from your hips, then you're going to try to get it somewhere just to get the movement accomplished. And so even if you have a strong core, since you just need to get the movement done, you'll intentionally turn those muscles off just so you can go through the range of motion necessary to hit a ball or throw something or what have you.
I think that's a mistake a lot of people make. They're like, oh, my back hurts because I have poor core strength. It's like, mm-hmm. well, maybe more of a mobility issue than a strength issue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. If you put really somebody through a range of motion that they can do with perfect technique, then they usually can do, go through that range of motion through, with a decent weight for them, for an appropriate number of reps, and they would only break down their technique on the very, very, very last few sets. That, when their legs are starting to fatigue, their back starts to fatigue, and it all kind of starts to fatigue together. But if you have them go extra low, like if you make them go lower than they're supposed to, then they'll start rounding their back before they're tired, and they'll start having their knees dive in before they're tired. And that doesn't mean they have a weak core. It just means that, well, they don't have the range of motion to do it at all. And if they don't have the range of motion to do it at all, then no amount of effort or coaching or cueing or yelling at them or them having the knowledge that, you know, they're supposed to keep their back tight is going to help. The same way that if someone says, hey, put your foot behind your head, if you just can't do it, then you just can't do it. And no amount of coaching or cueing or telling them what to do or them trying is going to make it happen. They just don't have the range of motion to get it done.
Yeah.
So the same thing, if you tell someone to hit a rock bottom squat, if they don't have the range of motion at their ankles, their hips, and their thoracic spine for extension to get it done, then they just can't do it.
Reminds me yesterday when McGoldrick was yelling at somebody. Somebody was doing Fran. He goes, breathe. Come on, breathe.
Yeah, he's telling David that.
You yelling at him won't help him breathe. He can't breathe. He just can't. Look what he's doing. Like, yelling more won't go. They'll go, oh, yeah, you're right. Casual breathing. Okay, it was like me when I tried to, like, I was trying to do toes to bar, like, in the spring. Like, somebody goes, come on, just touch your toes to the bar. I don't understand. Like, I go, look at me. I have my thighs and belly are hitting. This won't happen. So yeah, I agree. Some things just aren't going to happen unless you take some profound long-term interventions.
Yeah.
Actually,
we can hear Ashley. Ashley's downstairs laughing.
Yeah. I was going to say on the other side of that coin, if you do have very poor core strength, then what will happen is your body can actually lay down stiffness at your mobile joints as compensation for lack of stability. Okay, so if you're a very immobile person and you're also not very strong and you're trying to, you know, learn all these new CrossFit movements and you know, get better and have more range of motion,
for these yogis out there.
Yeah, well, you can get more range of motion sometimes, you know, by doing yoga and things like that, but oftentimes you're not going to do well under load, right? If you don't have stability as well.
So right? I'm saying this is a message to the yogis.
Okay, so anyway,
he's like whatever.
So anyway, if you don't have very good core stability, and as a result you compensate and you lay down stiffness at those mobile joints, then even if you try to stretch those mobile joints, but you don't work on your stability, it's going to be hard to make that change in mobility stick, because your body still, since it's not very stable at the stable joints, is laying down more stiffness at the mobile joints. So you can't just stretch or just work on stability. You got to do it both at the same time, which is kind of a roundabout way of saying you should have good technique all the time.
Right on. Very cool.
that was mine. You stole my thing.
Makes two strong points. Rebuttal from the gallery.
Inside joke.
Anytime I'm not listening to somebody, I say right on, and then I walk away.
Which at least try to play.
That was pretty funny.
You told everybody your secret just now.
I know.
You're screwed.
Well, everyone learned it a while back. I changed it to something else anyway.
Now figure out the new word. Yep. Let's go ahead and take a break real quick, and we'll come back. We're going to talk about how to program for core strength.
All right.
And we're back. More talking about core training.
Core training.
So we were just talking a little bit about, I have no idea what we were talking about before the break, but we're going to go into...
Attention span of a Reese's monkey.
Yeah. We're going to talk about programming a little bit, and we want to talk about... So maybe our favorite movements or our favorite... maybe unmovements for training the core.
Mm-hmm.
Unmovements.
Unmovements. That's a new one.
New term.
Anti-movement core training.
Unmovement.
Unmovement. Is it deloading or unloading?
I hate that shit.
Or anti-unmoving. So
unmoving.
Okay.
Whoa,
so
that's a whole training program we could put together. We call it the anti-unmoving training program.
Anti-kinetic training.
That's right. Sit on the couch.
What we do is we save up a bunch of potential energy. All right. So let's talk about anti-flexion first, or anti-extension, sorry. Okay. Anti-extension first, and I guess we will dive right in. Most popular anti-extension movement in CrossFit would be the GHD setup. So
yeah, I guess it's the most forceful one, right?
That's
a bitch of an exercise.
It will fire you up.
It'll make you pee.
I have actually heard of more cases of rhabdo.
Yeah, it'll give you the Coca-Cola
due to that movement over anything else. They say GHD sit-ups, and then behind that's like jumping pull-ups. Oh.
Yeah.
And the jumping pull-up is because they're not doing a real jumping pull-up. It's probably, because they're letting themselves down too slow.
Add to that the, I don't know what you officially call it, basically planking with the rings, or like Marcy does on the with her elbows on the rower. So basically throwing your right out in front of you and keeping a flat back.
Oh, you're talking about just an ab rollout.
Yeah.
Like, just like a week, you know, grab a wheel or a barbell or a set of rings.
I did them on the rows like 3 weeks ago, or the rings, right as, you know, with a little bit of a bent elbow position, just sort of, and standing, just sort of spilled out just enough where I started going, and then ratcheted it back. So it's like two sets of 10, and then was sore for like a week and a half.
Yeah. I actually programmed that pretty frequently with our CrossFitters. So the ring,
fantastically hard rings, and effective.
We call them ring fallouts if we do them with the rings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we do them on a barbell, we just call them rollouts, ab rollouts. Or we've got a wheel or two floating around the gym. I like those for anti-extension for the classes. I really don't program the GHD sit-ups, which is a big anti-extension, for the regular classes too much, just because too many people have like jacked themselves up. You know, two reasons. One, it causes a large range of motion, probably a range of motion that your abs have probably never experienced before. So it's got a lot of potential to cause damage. And the other, just a lot of eccentric loading there also.
Well, then you have to spend like 15 minutes of your class trying to get people confident enough to fly back without feeling like they're going to fall off the thing.
Most people don't need to be doing it. It
takes experience to do that well.
Yeah. And people that have back problems, you're going to throw them on a GHD machine and have, all right, go into hyperextend your back and then flex it, you know.
As fast as possible.
Under the load of your body. So, yeah, it's not the safest thing. It's probably something I would have never done for speed had it not been for CrossFit. I had done sit-ups on a GHD prior to discovering CrossFit, but it was like slow, methodical, and we would weight them. And then Doug was talking about, we talked about a little bit in the break, how people doing sit-ups, period. We just talk about sit-ups in general. And now that we're talking about like anti-extension and sit-ups fall in that category, and the dangers people run into with their pelvis and not being able to rotate.
Sit-ups are considered flexion, like trunk flexion.
Right.
So it wouldn't be anti-extension.
It wouldn't be anti-extension.
Yeah, just because you're flexing doesn't mean you're training anti-extension necessarily. So I wouldn't even put GHD sit-ups in that category for that reason. Just because you're working your abs doesn't mean you're training anti-extension, because the GHD sit-ups going from flexed to extended or even hyperextended for most people, and then back into flexion. You're moving your spine a lot. It's not anti-movement at all. It's a lot of movement. It's probably more movement than you get with any other ab exercise, so to speak.
Yeah.
So the fallouts and the rollouts, that stuff I would consider anti-extension, because you're not getting a lot of lumbar movement. You're putting your hands out in front of you if you're, you know, doing like a ab wheel rollout, and you're in that position where you could fall into lumbar extension if your abs weren't strong enough, and you're trying to maintain a position rather than moving this area at all. So for sit-ups, I would consider it to be trunk flexion rather than anti-extension.
Yeah, same muscles, but different action is happening.
Right, it's a different action. So it doesn't necessarily mean that GHD sit-ups are bad and only anti-extension are good. It's just kind of a different classification. And the thing about resisting or anti-movement is it's primarily an isometric contraction where the muscle's trying to actively shorten, but it's not actually changing length. And you tend not to get a lot of muscle damage like that. And so you tend not to get a very potent growth response. So it doesn't make you sore, and it doesn't really hypertrophy or make those muscles grow. So, I mean, if you're trying to grow your core, a lot of people aren't, then that's great. But if you're trying to gain muscle mass, or you're trying to win a physique contest, and you want to, you know, hypertrophy your abs and you know, get some deeper cuts or anything like that,
then you could
do that.
Deep cuts.
So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with working the muscles,
right?
But it's not primarily how we think about training. We tend to think about movements or anti-movement.
So if you want big abs
specifically,
big abs, GHD sit-ups are the way to go.
It'll make them grow.
Yeah.
I'll give them that because it's going to make them real sore. Because they do have that damage. Big eccentric stress through a big range of motion, a big stretch at the bottom.
All right. So that's, we'll say GHD sit-ups, that'd be probably your biggest core flexion exercise. And then say ab rollouts, ring fallouts, whatever you want to call them. Those would be a big anti-extension.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any other big anti-extension ones?
I mean, really, anytime you're maintaining a plank or push-up position, you're for the most part, if you're in the right position, so you're training anti-extension.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just rest in that position with a hyperextended lumbar spine and a bent hip, so they're not really training anti-extension because they're hyperextended the whole time. So, assuming you're in a good spot and you're doing the push-up correctly, you know, go to the Technique Wad episode on push-ups. I think I mentioned that very specific thing. Then yes, you're training anti-extension.
So if you're doing push-ups and you're kind of slacking in your core,
mm-hmm.
then you're doing it yourself.
Fix that shit, bro.
Yeah, if you're hitting yourself,
what you're doing,
you're doing yourself a disservice. So you get more out of your training.
Don't take shortcuts with stuff like that. Don't think, oh, it's only a push-up. Focus on what you're doing. I guess even if you're experienced.
Yeah, a lot of people, I think, are going for time. You know, they just want to like, all right, this is how the beginning of the rep looks, and this is how the end of the rep looks. So and as long as you get from A to B, it doesn't matter how you got there. Now, from a training perspective, it does matter. If you're in a competition, I say, you know, rules go out the window.
Sounds
but training,
good for refrigerator magnet quotes. Get to point A, point B. It doesn't matter how you get or whatever. But in actuality,
that's why I'm going to run for office one day. Yeah. I'm good with those.
I'll get us to where we need to go. Don't ask me how I'll do it. Close your eyes and look away.
No one ever does.
Actually on the note about sit-ups, like I wasn't really going to talk about sit-ups, but I'm going to say a quick thing about that. So most people, when they do core training, you know, they do 100 sit-ups in the morning and 100 sit-ups before they go to bed, and then they get to the gym and they do more and more and more sit-ups, and that's all they ever do is sit-ups, right? You know, a lot of people have kind of bastardized sit-ups over the years, saying, well, you don't really work your abs. It's all hip flexion. It's all working your hip flexors, as if working your hip flexors was bad for some reason. A lot of people have, you know, gone on rants about how bad sit-ups are for your low back. You know, Stuart McGill's come out, you know, when he wrote all of his low back books about how, you know, repeated lumbar flexion is basically going to give you some type of a bulging disc or something eventually if you don't have one already, which a lot of people do, even if they don't know it. But anyway, Mike Boyle a while back put out an interesting video where he was talking about most people that are doing sit-ups, you know, they're heavy, especially guys tend to have a lot of their weight in their upper body. And so just from a balance perspective and a center of mass perspective, if they have a lot of weight up top, in order to sit all the way up, you have to get your center of mass on that side of your hips in order to pull you all the way up. So you can try this. If you lie on your back and you try to do a sit-up with your feet really, really, really close to your butt, you know, that raises your center of mass up, and then you try to sit up to the top and you can't do it at all. Mm-hmm. But if you put your feet all the way straight out in front of you, it's similar to anchoring your feet on a kettlebell or something. When you anchor your feet on a kettlebell or you do a sit up with straight legs, your center of mass is really far down. So it's really easy to pull yourself up. What happens though, for a lot of people, is in order to get their center of mass down, is they curl their trunk. Oh. And by curling their trunk and going into maximum lumbar flexion, now their center mass is low enough where they can actually sit up. But in order to sit up at all, they have to maximally flex their trunk. And when they maximally flex their trunk, that's when they're bending their back and they're stretching, you know, all the muscles on the backside of their spine, or not muscles, but all the ligaments on the backside of their spine. And they're putting themselves at risk for a bulging disc because they have to take all their ab strength to flex their spine just to put themselves in a balanced position where they can actually sit up.
That shit makes a lot of sense.
Thank you.
So that makes good sense.
So that's really what I thought when I read that. I was like, holy shit, he's fucking right.
It's not that sit-ups are bad for you. It's the technique. Yeah. Again, if you practice proper technique, there's nothing wrong with it.
So if you lack flexibility and or have a very large upper body, I would recommend extending your feet and kind of externally rotating where you're pushing your knees out a little bit. It'll make it a little bit easier on your hips. Just like pushing your knees out super wide or having a really wide stance when you squat makes it easier to kind of sit into the hole. It's easier to flex your hip. So if you're a big person, then it'll help you to anchor your feet It'll help you to anchor your feet or to extend your legs a lot to bring your center of mass down, and then it won't be quite as hard on your spine.
Would you say, Doug, that I have a big upper body?
Yeah, no. It's bulging.
You have a ridiculously...
I'm just wondering.
You have a childlike physique.
Then the other point there...
I was like, the whole time you were talking, I was thinking,
I can't get up on a sit-up. Must be because my arms are so huge.
Is that why I can't do sit-ups? These huge pecs and shoulders?
My yoke is too thick?
So the other thing is that you shouldn't do sit-ups every single day of your life. You have other options, which we're going to talk about next.
Would you do shoulder presses every day? Probably not.
Yeah.
Do you squat every day?
Yes.
If you're Chris Moore, then yes. But the rest of the world, probably not. Like, you wouldn't train hard.
Same load or the same volume every single day. You would vary it in some way. You might squat heavy one day and then do body weight squats in your warm up the next day.
So this is actually something Doug introduced me to, and I started using it when I programmed for weightlifters and anyone who's doing like sports specific training is, you know, on day one you have anti extension, day two, anti rotation, day three anti lateral flexion.
You're achieving so, balance.
Right. So you can train the core every single day without overtraining the core, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
That way...
That's funny. Man, it reminds me of the approach I was taking over the last year or so with squats, about squatting frequently.
Oh, yeah.
And you said how you don't do it the same way. One thing I realized is that if I combine squats strategically and did them all heavily but differently in a sort of sequence way and get good result, meaning that if I did a paused... box squat on day one, that I sit back further, it's a little more hip dominant, it's a little more lower back dominant, that's going to be really tough to recover from. If on the next day or the day after that I also did something that was low back dominant, like another low bar back squat. But if I do, let's say, a front squat on that day, I'm squatting heavy, I can squat heavy to max, very heavy stuff, but now my thoracic spine and maybe a little more quadricep is being taxed. So I'm doing the same looking thing, but they're complementary exercises. Like, yeah. Makes sense to what they're saying. If I'm doing an ab exercise, I'm training abs every day, but if they're fundamentally different ways of doing it, then the sum of those things is a comprehensive training of your abs.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's that way
you can train your core every day, but just keep it different. Don't do anti-extension every day of the week.
I endorse that approach.
So.
We need some more of that on the podcast. All right, so we did anti-extension, anti-flexion. Anti-flexion was doing squats and deadlifts and things like that. Anything where you're trying to keep yourself out of rounding your back.
Right? So we'll talk about anti-lateral flexion now.
Okay.
That would be like a single-arm farmer's carry.
That's my favorite one by far.
You pick up a lot of weight on one arm, and you keep yourself from falling over sideways.
Yeah, a one-arm farmer's walk, and then for that matter, any kind of farmer's walk or yoke walk.
Yeah, anything. Yeah. Anytime really, you're walking,
really cannot beat those for just building strength.
Mm-hmm.
The favorite thing I did, the point I was going to make earlier is that when I started powerlifting, I assumed because the guys I was around did that you had to do a bunch of ab exercises. You did a bunch of, sometimes I did this dumbbell back and forth mumbo jumbo, a lot of crunches, a lot of weighted sit-ups, a lot of spread eagle sit-ups, way behind your head, glue ham sit-ups, a lot of band crunches and everything. And then for some reason I realized, this takes me like 45 minutes to do. I hate this shit. This is all seems stupid. And I don't know if it means anything to do this. Like, I don't know if getting better at banded standing crunches really helps me deadlift more. And then I went a long stretch just doing lifts and noticed no difference, which was interesting, that whatever I needed for power thing I seemed to get by doing power lifts. It's a earth-shattering
incredible
and then I got to where I achieved some really good abs.
That should be the only thing you put on incredibler.com.
Incredibler.
The set
then I went that phase where I did strongman training. Then you go into a phase of strongman training and do a lot of yoke, a lot of farmers, a lot of this, that, and the other. I also did a lot of suitcase deadlifts, which basically, I mean, if you do like a set of 3 to 5 to 10 reps in a deadlift with just one arm. So you're picking your weight off the ground. I used to do them with bands. So you put a bar in the rack, tie bands around it, and then do a rack pull just with one arm, standing sideways, not against the bar, but standing parallel with the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So all those things are just monumentally effective at teaching you to not bend your spine. Yes.
So if you want to like train your core to have a six pack abs, then crunches are fine. But like if you want to train your abs or your core to increase your athleticism,
like if you look,
you got to do stuff like what you're talking
look
about.
Look at a guy like Zydrunas Savickas or Misha Coakley, one of the top strongmen in the world. Some will be a little fat, of course, because they're huge men and they're not concerned with body composition. But if you just take a focused look at the way their abs are developed, it's insane. Their lumbar spine and their abs, they look like they are animations. They don't look human. And, you know, doing a circus dumbbell pressing overhead with 250 pounds in one hand for reps, or running with 800 pounds in a farmer's walk, this breeds insane development of your abdominal muscles. So if you want strong abs, I can't think of anything you should do other than that.
So if you're lifting something off the ground with one hand, or pressing something with a single hand overhead, or if you're taking steps, you're loading one side of your body, either from the bottom with your legs or from the top by picking something with your arms, then you're having to resist
that's like the
that lateral
that's
flexion.
Like the mountaintop of ab training, in my opinion. But one caveat would be you still have to ask yourself what you like to improve if you're a CrossFitter. You know, what do you want to get better at? And if you're a competitive CrossFitter, what will you be asked to do? Because like in my experience, I thought I had extremely fit abs based on strength movements. But then like doing a Tabata workout one day for CrossFit, when I was fooling around with CrossFit some, I noticed I did a set of 20. Hey, this is all right. I could probably do 100 reps of this. The next set of 10, and I felt a little twinge. I try the next set, and I go into a horrible full body abdominal cramp that was just like 10 minutes long. I was just on the ground going, oh Jesus. I couldn't even straighten my body. I was like, ah, trying to push away from myself to straighten out. Yeah, I think he was actually over that class.
CTP was coaching.
Yeah, but there's that specificity thing where you can have insanely strong abs by doing tons of farmer's walk, and that's going to be very great for you. But if you think that will translate to you being able to do a glute ham sit-up or just regular sit-ups for reps and some other thing because you think you're a tough guy, you're going to be just blown apart. Well, so specificity still rules. You have to have some ability to do all this stuff. You have to work on some of it. Even if it's not a focus, you have to maybe do some sit-ups, you know.
Well, I mean, I think that's the difference by finding the balance between core flexion exercises and anti-lateral.
So sometimes you have to learn these lessons the hard way.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to have somebody just tell you, but that's too easy to just accept the lesson without having to go through the mistake.
Yeah, it's not nearly humbling enough if somebody tells you.
Like you have to roll around the floor like a fish that's dying. Oh, God. Fighting it futilely.
And okay, the last core exercise or last core movement / unmovement would be anti-rotation. Mm-hmm. And I would say my favorite anti-rotation exercise would be a kettlebell snatch.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do a nice heavy kettlebell snatch, then you're probably pretty good with anti-rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So
how does that work?
One of the things what I was wanting to talk about was with the snatch. I think Matt Hoff did kettlebell snatch in one of the technique ones.
PaleoNow.com.
PaleoNow.com.
That's right.
Matt Hoff. He
friend of the show.
That's right. He came and did a seminar with us. It was great. And he was telling us the importance. And it's one of those things that I had overlooked as a coach was not keeping your shoulders square when doing a snatch. Mm-hmm. So I think, in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to let myself turn too much when I do kettlebell snatches. But he made it, paramount. Like, mm-hmm. do not let your shoulders twist when you're doing a kettlebell snatch. Keep your chest pointing forward. Don't let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
You really think about it. If you're holding a kettlebell, say you're snatching a 70-pound kettlebell, and you got it in your hand and it's swinging down and it's pulling you and you're twisting, it's probably not too good for your back to be under that load and experiencing torsion. So anti-extension falls in that category, keeping those shoulders nice and square mm-hmm. and letting the hips drive that power and not, your back bending. So mm-hmm. That's probably my favorite anti-extension or anti-rotation. Mm-hmm. I know, Doug, I think your favorite. I think I know what it is.
Oh yeah.
Let's see what you say. Or do you want me to guess it?
This is like your engagement
I'll,
party.
I'll make it harder. What's my favorite for beginners versus advanced?
Oh, dude, I don't know that one.
How close is your relationship?
That's right.
We're not real friends.
You're gonna marry this guy?
I know,
you know
this bromance is over.
Maybe, maybe.
I guess the little band don't twist thing. Put exactly the band out and you don't move.
That's what we write on the programs when we write them is the banded don't twist thingy.
All sorority girls love that one.
Yeah. Well, I know you like the program, the Palath Press.
Yeah, I like Palath Presses
I like it too.
For beginners, yeah, especially. Palath Press. Especially tall kneeling Palath Presses where you're kneeling down on both legs.
And then the more what advanced folks, you really like the standing Palath Press.
I was going to say standing full contact twist with the handles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That actually, we don't do those. Well, the reason we don't do them too much is because we have limited equipment and space.
Yeah.
And you're not going to, this is one of those things that you do on your own. Mm-hmm. You need a landmine or a what is it we have?
Grappler.
A grappler. Mm-hmm. So that's Louis Simmons' deal, yeah. Right?
Rogue makes those little things you can attach onto the bottom of the Pyrex now.
Oh yeah,
cool. Oh, dude, the yeah. There's always a new thing by Rogue coming out.
But you know what? That makes a lot of sense, dude. That modular concept makes a lot of sense.
I can't stop spending money because they keep on coming out with brilliant pieces of equipment. All right, so
sometimes they miss. Sometimes they miss.
I don't know.
All right, so no, you want to explain what those two movements are for people that don't know what they are?
What do you mean? Oh, the Palath
Press. Most people don't know what a Palath Press is or a full contact twist.
Palath Press, you're probably going to use a band in your place. Most CrossFits have bands and not cable machines. So a Palath Press would be, you know what?
We're going to do technique wads and all this stuff, but by the way, but you can tell them anyway.
This is the banded, not don't bend.
You tie a band around a post. You get some tension on it. Best thing to do is go from the knees, especially in the beginning. Grab the band in a hand, pull it to your chest. And then from your chest with tension on it, the band is pulling from your side about 90 degrees. You're going to press that band out away from you, and you're going to basically resist that change. So you're going to try and keep nice and straight. Hold that for 30 seconds. Find a band in a distance that works for you, and you could probably change the progression by using thicker bands or creating more distance between you and whatever you hook that band to. If you're in a more traditional gym setting, you could just use a cable machine, and you could use different weights. It might actually be a little bit easier to set up a progression way.
But yeah, but I think in this situation, bands are beneficial. Mm-hmm. That elastic tension during ab exercises is really nice. In my experience, not that it's really worth anything, but like that using a plate, the mechanics of those plate machines and that kind of stuff, I don't feel like you get a consistent active pull against you. But it's kind of hard to articulate what that means exactly, but I mean
it's different
band is
gravity.
Pulling back more aggressively to try to get you to twist versus the weight. We're kind of sometimes you can move the weight to position, that's the hard part, but keeping it there maybe it's not necessarily that hard. That makes sense. Some of those devices don't.
Yeah, maybe the wheels aren't too greased too well and.
Yeah, the band just works pleasantly.
I think the band is worked.
It doesn't seem like it should be different, but I agree with you. It does feel different.
I can't
different.
Necessarily wrap the words on what that means, but like when you do certain exercise with the band,
it sounds silly, but I agree.
A band, like a tricep extension is kind of similar, where you can do like 100 pounds on a tricep extension in a gym. And it doesn't really feel like maybe you're doing anything. You could double the weight and it almost feels the same. But a band, that active tension of the band trying to retract you back as you're trying to extend against
it. Well, I understand if like you're doing something where you're moving because the band's getting longer and the tension's growing bigger as you go through the movement. But an isometric hold like a Palath Press, it shouldn't make a difference, but for some reason it does feel tougher.
It's a qualitative difference.
Anyways, let's move on. We spent way too much time on bands versus
in
cable.
The weeds.
That's mm-hmm. right. And then the other one,
the full contact twist.
I'll let you explain the full contact twist.
Yeah, I'll probably do technique wad on that movement in the near future. That'd be the best way to go about it.
You have to now.
I know.
You just told everyone you would.
I know. Announced it early.
They're going to start emailing.
Keep your eyes out for that. Basically, what it is you grab the end of a barbell, and then the bar is just... extending down toward the floor, and you're on this side, and then you swing the bar over your head to the other side, and while you're doing it, you're twisting your feet kind of like you would hit a baseball where you would twist your back leg, and then you just go back and forth. And if you have handle attachment, it kind of goes in a V like this. All it does is increase the range of motion that you're taking the bar through, and it makes it feel a hell of a lot heavier, and it's a hell of a lot harder. So I'll do a technique while on that in the future, but that's my favorite resisting rotation exercise. On that note, if you don't have enough rotation in your hips, then you're going to then you're not going to be able to do that very well.
Yeah, so. I see a lot of people that aren't as experienced, and I've done it. Made the mistake myself is end up with a lot of rotating in my back, and then you're like you're bending your back. I go
in that.
I knew that.
In that mobility world, you also to show like some hacks how you do it if you don't have a grappler. Put in a corner, maybe lay a sandbag over to keep it in place. Grab the handle.
A lot of times, I don't even put it in the corner. I just put it in the middle of the room, and it
works fine.
It stays fine, like especially with the handle on, because it's not moving so fast. It's not like flopping around.
Yeah,
but the handle's a lot slower and more controlled.
I prefer the baby method. You should get a small child. You
just place it.
Put
it
lay the baby over the barbell.
Yeah, lay the and then
or shove the bar in the barbell in the baby's mouth.
that's just rude.
hygienic.
The only thing that we really didn't mention today that's kind of in that category that some people mention whenever they're having this kind of discussion is getting active hip flexion with a neutral spine. A lot of people don't train hip flexion above 90 degrees, proactively. And as a result, we were kind of talking about this during the break or before the show.
I was trying to get you to talk about this earlier. It's finally come around. Jeez.
So what Ashley does to you? She's like, I wanted you to talk about this, and you were like, I don't know when you wanted me to talk about
why
that
not
or
just
why
ask
you
me
said
to talk
that.
About it.
Ashley's my other wife.
What was your girlfriend's name on the other show?
No, she was my other wife or my girlfriend?
I don't know. I derailed the conversation, though. So anyway, so active hip flexion with a neutral spine. And basically, that means training hip flexion above 90 degrees. A lot of people can't do this top range of motion very well because they have very weak iliacus and psoas muscles, which are muscles that run from the top of your leg up onto your lumbar spine.
Will people learn about this in Maximum Mobility?
They'll learn about that a little bit. I don't go into this specific core training in that product, but I do talk about having range of motion issues and how that affects how it affects your stability, which is kind of what we're talking about right now. So, but I don't prescribe or suggest any movements to fix that kind of core training in the future. You want to hear my Rocky soundtrack?
Oh, Doug's ringer.
Is that your fiance calling you?
No, this is my it's time to go to bed ringer.
What's with you guys having alarms to tell you when to go to sleep?
It's all about productivity, Chris. All about productivity.
Really,
you know, if
that's my go to bed alarm.
If like
past my bedtime, Chris.
If you had our schedule and like owned your own business, you could sleep in as long as you want. You could go to bed whenever you wanted.
Can you imagine such a life? It would be terrible.
It would. If you don't have alarms to and you know structures in place to remind you to
your
live
life
a normal
drift
life
into an aimless void, right?
Pretty much. If my wife went out of town for a week once, and I just stayed up later and later every night, and then I would wake up at the same time, and I was just more and more tired as the week went on. I was like, all right, I'll catch on. I'll unsleep tonight. I'll go to bed early. Nope, just stayed up even later.
You demand a regimented lifestyle.
I need somebody to say your alarm's going off. You need to go to bed. You're right.
Did you finish that point about the neutral spine?
Sorry.
I'll make sure the readers.
This is why we
don't
do. This is why we don't do podcasts at night.
Yeah.
This is all CTP's fault for suggesting.
Well, Doug can close this point, and we can make closing comments.
We have derailed the conversation more than we have in the last few shows on this show.
It's fun.
So anyway, sorry. If you can train a active hip flexion above 90 degrees with a neutral spine more often, and you can strengthen your psoas and your iliacus muscles, then you're less likely to get a synergistically dominant rectus femoris, which is one of your quads, the only quad that crosses your hip as well.
It's that middle one that sticks out.
Yeah, it's one. We'll say it's the one right here because that's usually kind of where you feel it when you pull it. But that's why that happens. Oftentimes, if you can't use your psoas very well or you have a weak psoas, then you'll overuse that one quad that acts also as a hip flexor. And then that's how people very frequently pull their hip flexor or their quad when doing things like sprinting. So if you do have to do something like sprinting very frequently, then it might be in your best interest to include that type of training in your program. So low level exercises be dead bugs, and you can Google this stuff. Be things like dead bugs. That's probably my favorite thing because they look like Pilates. They look like you're not doing anything, but inevitably every time I ever show this to anybody, they think they're really hard.
I like getting that 240-pound football player in who can do everything well, and then you give him dead bugs, and he's like, oh! And he's like, Which exercise do you hate the most? The dead bug.
That's how last football player we trained was, for like, sure.
Chase was that way. He's like, can I back squat, you know, 350 pounds for five sets of five, please? I want to do that instead of dead bugs. I'm like, you're insane.
That's right. So that's probably the one that I use 90% of the time, and there's ways to scale that. Maybe I'll do it. I'll throw that in the technique quad too. But
banded.
But I want to throw that in at the very end because that fits in the same category. For
absolutely,
me.
Yeah. Very cool. I remember the first time I did dead bugs. It was so hard. You should do them too. All right.
Brilliant.
Yes. All right, Doug, what do we talk? We're going to close it up. What do we plug in here?
I think the most logical thing is to promote the...
Logical.
Okay. No, the most logical
the most
thing
logarithmical.
Is logarithmical. to promote the mobility seminar because it really fits with all the stuff we've been talking about. Today, we primarily talked about stability and core training for our stable joint, which is our low back, even though we talked kind of about the core altogether. But the mobility product basically talks about how to make all your mobile joints more mobile and then also how to keep stability at what I'm going to call your stable joints. And I talk about that concept all the time, and I mentioned a little bit here today, but it really ties in very well with all the core training that we talked about today. So if you want to kind of learn more about what good technique is and how to train each one of your joints for their very specific needs, then the Product Maximum Mobility and the Fitter Shop can really tie together everything that we talked about here today. Chris?
Yeah, well, speaking of Fitter Shop, you can go to the Fitter Shop and check out Simple Strength. Is that what I named that? The Strength Seminar. It's actually quite good.
It is quite good.
Enter the promo code Rogan for a 10% discount. Not true. Check that out if you want. And then you can go by my blog. Come read what I post there on the blog. Just put up a post today on a novel, very super simple take on how to approach getting better at some skill you're new at. I basically boiled down what you should understand about periodization into like five little points. And somebody posted that it was just what they needed today to help them keep perspective when they went to the gym. So go there, read some stuff, see what you think, reach out to me, send me a message. I'd love to talk to you. So that's about it. TheChrisMooreBlog.com. That's about all I've got.
I read that article today. I liked
that. It's occurred to me that
to the could, point.
Were you the guy?
I wasn't the guy, but
oh, Chris, that article was so good. Thanks, hot chick on Facebook.
I created an account. Took my sister's picture.
Did you just call your sister hot on the show?
Oh, jeez.
Oh boy.
My sisters are both really ugly. All right.
Oh, wait. For the record. Hey, you can't say that.
Oh, no. Sorry, Lindsay. She watches this. Oh, I probably shouldn't have said her name. All right. Make sure you go to the Fitter website, FITR.TV. That's how you spell it. Go there, check it out, sign up for our newsletter so you can get updates on things we're doing next. And check out the Barbell Shrug coffee mug.
That'll hold your coffee and keep it warm.
And any drugs you might want to put in there too.
Yeah.
I feel like people believe you the way this episode's been going. We've gone off on enough tangents tonight where they're probably starting to wonder what are in our mugs.
It's not coffee.
CTP can edit this stuff out. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. We always say
he'll edit out the whole episode.
Hey, CTP, could you edit this out? He's like, oh yeah, I got it. And then I'm watching him like, he did not edit that out one bit. Thanks a lot.
He's a busy guy. He has a lot to do.
I don't know if he's lazy or just wants to see us embarrass ourselves.
A little both, maybe. Yeah.
He says it's mostly embarrassment. All right. See you guys next week.
All right.
What a terse close. See you next week.